As we begin today, I would recommend to you, if you can possibly do it, to have the ability to mark your Bible in two different places so that you can kind of flip back and forth between them as needed. First passage is 2 Samuel 24. Second passage, 1 Chronicles chapter 21. We are blessed by having two witnesses of the events that we're going to go over today. And these are very important events because, by my estimation, this is the story of a final poor choice by David. At the end of a series of poor choices over about a decade and a half since his first big poor choice of having that affair with Bathsheba. Now, the affair with Bathsheba, I believe, happened right around the 21st year of David's kingdom, which would have made him about 51 years of age. So he was in the midst of a bit of a midlife crisis. But this event that we're looking at today is going to happen right around his mid-60s, when I think David is starting to struggle with his loss of personal power. Think about this. His own son, Absalom, rebelled against him, I believe, in his 35th year of the kingdom, when David was about 65. And even after that issue was resolved with the death of Absalom, immediately there is another coup attempt against David by Sheba the Benjamite, probably a much younger man than David. And then that coup gets put down by force. And then evidently, the following spring, the Philistines decide that after years under David's control, they want their independence again. And so they have a Philistine uprising. And during the attempt of the Israelis to put down that uprising, David is almost killed in battle. As I said, he's about 66 years of age. He has lost some steps. He's lost some muscle tone and some speed in his abilities to fight. And he almost gets killed. And because of that, his soldiers, particularly his commanders, tell him, "You can't go out on military maneuvers with us anymore. If you get killed, it's the end of the kingdom. We can't have that." And so David is now stuck having to be the king who sits at the palace waiting to hear how battles went, rather than the guy that's right in the middle of the fray. And as you can appreciate, he sees that as being indication that he's less than what he used to be. Now, the scripture doesn't say all that. That's, I think, a reasonable reading of the situation by what we know from experience. And so David feels less than he's ever felt before. And often when a person, particularly a man, I think, of great power, finds himself in this situation, he decides to remedy it by asserting that he's still in control, that he can still do things. And I think that it was at this moment that Satan presents David with a temptation that David gives into. Now, thankfully, even after God judges what happens here, he is able to bring something good out of it. And we will talk at length about what that good is. Now, one of the things that I had in mind when I told you to mark the two places, 2 Samuel 24, 1 Chronicles 21, is that we need to compare the phrasing between these two passages, because I think there is a key phrase that is missing from the text of 2 Samuel 24. And I think it might have been something that was dropped because of a scribal issue. Remember, scribes were not inspired themselves, and they could accidentally make errors in spelling and in maybe seeing the words of a line as if it were the same line again and drop a line out. And I think that's exactly what happened here. And it's particularly because we see the word Israel several times in the context right here in the passage. So this is the way that the English Standard Version has the first verse of 2 Samuel 24. Let me read that to you first. Again, the anger of he who is was kindled against Israel, and he incited David against them, saying, go number Israel and Judah. Now, right off the bat, you can see that there's something kind of strange about that, because we know that God tempts no one to do sin. And God would certainly not try to get David to do something wrong so that he could then turn around and punish him. 1 Chronicles 21, verse 1, says this about the same topic. It says, then Satan, or that's the Hebrew word for adversary, the devil we're talking about, stood against Israel and incited David to number Israel. So the 1 Chronicles 21 passage makes it clear that it is Satan, who is the one that tempts David to do this sinful thing. So I think what's happened is that that line in 1 Chronicles 21:1 was originally in verse 1 of chapter 24 of 2 Samuel. Let me read it to you as if that were the case. Are you ready? Here we go. Again, the anger of he who is was kindled against Israel. Satan stood against Israel and incited David to number Israel, saying to him, go number Israel and Judah. And so now you can see that we've got two different persons that are involved in the story of David's numbering. God is going to bring judgment because of his choice, but it is Satan that started the ball rolling by tempting David to recapture some of his power by seeing exactly how many men he could muster for war if he wanted to. Now, this is problematic because God had warned way back in the time of Moses that Israel should never look at their military abilities as an indicator of how strong they were. In fact, Moses said that when there is a king eventually, he was not supposed to number wives to himself, that is, try to make all these different connections and alliances and marital treaties, because that would, you know, that would be the power that the king would try to depend upon. And he was not supposed to multiply horses and chariots to himself, and not even numbers of a standing army, because when a king of Israel starts looking at his business alliances, his governmental alliances, his military alliances, and his military power by horses and men and chariots, He quits depending upon God. So Satan has convinced David in this down point in his life to do something he should never have done. And strangely enough, Joab, a man who has done a lot of wicked stuff, understands that this is a bad choice. Let's read, first of all, in 2 Samuel 24:2. So the king said to Joab, the commander of the army, who was with him, "Go through all the tribes of Israel from Dan to Beersheba and number the people that I may know the number of the people." Now, he's not taking a census of everybody. David is interested in how many fighting men can I put on a field? That's what he wants to know. And so Joab said to the king, "May he who is your God add to the people 100 times as many as they are, while the eyes of my lord the king shall see it. But why does my lord the king delight in this thing?" Now, that's the wording from 2 Samuel 24. Let's listen to Joab from 1 Chronicles 21:3. Joab said, "May he who is add to his people 100 times as many as they are. Are they not my lord the king, all of them my lord's servants? Why then should my lord require this? Why should it be a cause of guilt for Israel?" So David gives Joab an order. "I want all the fighting men numbered from the far north, Dan, to the far south, Beersheba, and you come back and tell me how many fighting men I have." And Joab's response is, "Why? Why do you want to do that? All of the people serve you. That's all you need to know. Don't do this thing that will bring guilt upon Israel." Because it's a sin, basically, is what Joab is saying. Now, again, consider who's saying this. Joab has murdered 3 different guys by this time in his life just because he wanted to retain power. David has not acted against him up to this point because David is afraid of the power that Joab has. But Joab feels that what David is asking is over the line. But it doesn't do him any good. We're in 1 Chronicles 21, so let's just continue there in verse 4. "But the king's word prevailed against Joab. So Joab departed and went throughout all Israel and then came back to Jerusalem. And Joab gave the sum of the numbering of the people to David. In all Israel, there were 1,100,000 men who drew the sword." See, that's how we know that this is about military men. It's not about the population as a whole. "And in Judah, 470,000 who drew the sword." So David has more than 1.5, almost 1.6 million people that can go to war for him. That's a lot. Verse number 6, though, says, "And he did not include Levi and Benjamin in the numbering, for the king's command was abhorrent to Joab." So Joab got a big number. Let's call it 1.6 million. But he didn't count everyone because he hated the whole process, because he felt it was going to bring God's wrath down upon the nation. Now, 2 Samuel chapter 24 gives us more of the process and how long it took to do this. It says in verse 4, "But the king's word prevailed against Joab and the commanders of the army." See, apparently the commanders also objected. "So Joab and the commanders of the army went out from the presence of the king to number the people of Israel. They crossed the Jordan and began from Aroer. Now that's southern, the southern part of eastern Israel, the side of Israel that's on the east side of the Jordan River, the annexed area. And so they start in the south, and from that city that is in the middle of the valley toward Gad and on to Yazer, so that's heading north now, along the eastern side of the Jordan. Then they came to Gilead, that's up toward the eastern side of the Jordan River as it's coming out of the Sea of Galilee. Then they came to Kadesh in the land of the Hittites. Kadesh is a little bit north and slightly west of the northern tip of the Sea of Galilee. And then they came to Dan. Dan is, as we already talked about, pretty much the northern border region of Israel proper. And then they went around to Sidon. So from Dan, you head eastward and a little bit, westward and a little bit north, and that's going to take you into the region of Sidon and Tyre, by the way. So they came to the fortress of Tyre and all the cities of the Hivites and the Canaanites. So that would be some of the areas that Israelis are living inside of, but it's slightly outside of the original Promised Land territory. So he's got all of that stuff taken care of. And then he goes southward through Israel proper, all the land on the west side of the Jordan. And eventually they came out to the Negev of Judah at Beersheba, so the southernmost part of the census area. There are a few communities to the south of Beersheba, but Beersheba is kind of the last big one on the south side. And so when they had gone through all the land, they came to Jerusalem at the end of 9 months and 20 days. Now, we can backdate that from the event that happens next, because we know that God's judgment falls in the time of threshing, which would be in the late summer, moving into the fall. And so you go back 9 months, 20 days from there, and you're talking about the fall. Probably just after the sabbatical year had closed out and the Israelis were starting to prepare their crops for the following year's harvest. Because by my calculations, the year previous to this was a sabbatical cycle year. Now, the numbers are slightly different in this, and I've explained that before, that it's a function of either approximation, which sometimes that's what we do, we round up or we round down, or maybe something in the spelling of these numbers was not quite copied perfectly. So Joab gave the sum of the numbering of the people of the king in Israel. There were 800,000 valiant men. Remember, it was 1.1 million in the other text. So the other text might have an approximation that Joab makes up for Benjamin that he didn't bother with. What was the other one? I think it was Levi, the Levites that he didn't bother with. So this might be the actual count, and then the other being the estimated count if it had been finished. And then of the men of Judah, there were 500,000, and that's that sounds a little bit like a roundup from 470,000 we had in the other one. All right, so you know the situation up this point. It's taken almost 10 months. Joab didn't want to do it. The commanders of the army didn't want to do it. But David insisted that he wanted to know how many men he had that made him powerful as the king of Israel. But once it's finished, David realizes that what he's done was wrong. We're in 2 Samuel, so let's just continue there. Verse number 10 of chapter 24. David's heart struck him after he had numbered the people. And David said to he who is, I have sinned greatly in what I have done. But now, oh, he who is, please take away the iniquity of your servant, for I have done very foolishly. So it dawns on him that he has screwed up again by thinking that his power is based not in his relationship with God, but in his military might. And it is at this point that God responds through his prophet, Gad, with the punishment. So verse number 11, when David arose in the morning, the word of he who is came to the prophet Gad, David's seer. We've had several prophets that have been around David during his life. Gad seems to be the one that's there at the tail end of David's life. So this is the message. Go and say to David, thus says he who is, three things I offer you. Choose one of them that I may do it to you. So God is basically saying, all right, David, you have screwed up. Not just you, but the people. And I think God is actually dealing with a lot of problems over the last couple of years. Remember, the Absalom coup was supported by the vast majority of leadership. People actually did want Absalom on the throne rather than David. And there was a lot of sinful activity that happened during this time period. And a lot of infighting between the tribes. So there is a lot of sin that needs to have judgment. And so God gives David a choice. You choose how the punishment falls upon you and the nation. Because nations are very often caught up in the punishment of a sin by the leadership. Verse number 13. So Gad came to David and told him and said to him, shall 3 years of famine come to you in your land? And we've actually seen 3 years of famine that God sent as judgment for actions taken by King Saul. That was just a few chapters earlier. So that's choice number one. 3 years of famine were guaranteed. People are going to die. Or will you flee 3 months before your foes while they pursue you? Choice number two. I, God, allow foreign nationals, a foreign army, to come in and wreak havoc in your land. Destroy stuff, take people captive, and kill people. 3 months of that. Because judgment has to happen. Or shall there be 3 days pestilence in your land? Now, the idea of pestilence here, when we think of pestilence, a lot of times we think about disease running rampant. And that might have been part of the mechanism that God uses here. But the more strict way to understand this word is a swat, a spanking. The word plague has come to us from other languages to mean a strike with a rod. And so God is basically saying, or would you want me to spank you for 3 days? Let me make the choices about who is going to die, instead of letting it be randomized by famine or randomized by non-Israelis coming in and causing trouble. And then God says through Gad, "Now consider and decide what answer I shall return to him who sent me." It probably doesn't take David very long to come up with his response, because listen to his thinking. "Then David said to Gad, 'I am in great distress.'" Now, the great distress comes from the fact that he knows there's no way out of this judgment. It's coming. People will die because of his choice, and I think by extension, the choices of others in leadership over the last several years. So people will be lost. But then he says this, "Let me fall into the hand of he who is, for his mercy is great, but let me not fall into the hand of man." So David feels that God would be the better choice to mete out judgment, because he will do it with mercy in mind and loving compassion. And it reminds me of a passage in the New Testament quoted from the Old about the fact that the Lord chastens those he loves. The Lord carries out discipline against those that he loves. But when he does it, he intends it to bring good about. That cannot always be said about humanity when they carry out judgment, because sometimes they're very vengeful and spiteful. But God will be the one that David feels he can trust in this judgment time. So we're pretty much done for the day. Tomorrow we will come back and we will see how the judgment of God brings about the choice of where the temple is going to be built.